say we were in the first and second grade. Sort of piqued our interest, made us a little bit more creative and challenged our minds a little bit more. So I really enjoyed going to that school. And it was more like a family than it was a school because we knew everybody, we were raised with everybody. Upstairs, the priest lived upstairs also, but his rooms were adjacent to some of the school rooms there. And that was 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade school. The 8th grade classes, I believe.
Where was it?
It was right behind the church. I'll show you when you go up there. Okay, right now, our school room is the conference room. So that's where we hold meetings, et cetera, et cetera. What I would like to do is show you around this area here in Center Wheeling because so many of the immigrants opened up businesses right here in this very area. And Wheeling, at that time, I think was a perfect model for an enclave city because you could almost tell by the person's address what nationality they were. Center Wheeling was mainly German, Lebanese, Syrian, and Greek. Now, East Wheeling, a lot of Italians lived there. South Wheeling, you had the Eastern Europeans, like the Polish, Croatians, Slovaks, and the Ukrainians. Also, they had churches indicative to their nationalities in that area. Our church up here, which is Our Lady of Lebanon Church, is the only Maronite church in the state of West Virginia. Okay? And then the Ukrainians down in South Wheeling, they had St. Mary's and the Byzantine Church. So that was the focal point of the immigration population at that time. Everything they did, whether it's spiritual or social, centered on their churches. Okay? And I would have to say that the early immigrants, they more or less stayed with their nationality. But the next generation that came up, they sort of branched out. Not a lot of them married within their nationality. Some of them did, some of them didn't. I'm a product of that. I'm half German, Lebanese, and English. So that's the way it went after that. But I was raised by my grandmother, so I have a lot of the Lebanese traits and the cooking skills, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. And are those communities, like the neighborhoods, do they still fall along those lines or not so much?
The neighborhoods where I live is basically gone.
Oh.
Okay. Like a lot of cities transitioning, you know, it moves on. They move out to the suburbs. Practically all the Lebanese population, or what's left of it, like me, moved out to the suburbs. At that time, nobody owned an automobile. Everybody used to walk to everybody's home. They used to walk to the church. The church didn't even have a parking lot at that time. That was the school playground. But now we have a parking lot. And so everybody is on the outskirts now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll just leave this on as we go on a little walk.
She was a really friendly lady that, you know, opened her door to everyone. She rented those rooms.
Yeah.
Across the street over there was the Swan Cafe. Thomas John opened that up. Up the street was Maroon's Clothing Store.
Hmm.
Okay, where the Wheeling Flower Shop is now.
Okay.
That was in business for years. Well, most of these were in business for years and years and years. And a lot of the Lebanese lived on this street, too, like the Thomas family and the Khalil family lived by there. Over their school and raised their family there. Well, my grandfather, he had a coffee, no longer there, but he had a coffee house down there on this street, on this side.
Hmm.
So a lot of, and then Mr. Jackson had a grocery store down around the corner.
Okay.
So they would, if there was a storefront open, okay, and they could scrape together a little bit of money, they went in, opened the doors, and opened the business. They were very good vendors. I don't know if that was because they were sort of descended from the Phoenicians, who were the first sailing vendors or what,
mm-hmm.
but it seemed like to be inherent in them,
mm-hmm.
that they could sell goods.
Uh-huh.
Okay? What I would like to do now is to take you up to the church.
Okay.
There it is right there. You can see it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You mind walking?
Sure.
Okay.
Is there, what kind of coffee? Was there a special Lebanese coffee?
My grandfather used to, when his coffee, that was a combination coffee house and texture. He sold me ice cream, potato chips, candy, you know, all that stuff. But then the men used to come in and he used to make a perfect coffee.
Yeah.
It was brewed in that little brass cup that was, oh, strong as it could be. But the men used to sit there, play cards, and drink their coffee.
Lebanese community, if they didn't have a business or a shop, what were other trades?
Women, steel, men, men. Mm-hmm. They worked at doing steel. Oh, one of our men, one of our men, had a fish cart and a horse, and he used to go around, he used to sell vegetables and fruit. And his sons eventually opened the same restaurant up there. It's closed now, but that was a staple here in New England for many, many years.
Is it Lebanese food? And now, is the Lebanese bakery one of the only remaining businesses?
There's the closest other one that we took first.
Okay.
Most of the women that I know anyway, their families have
not found
the chicken
skin. So what are of the things that you learn to make and still make?
Today, that's the matching gift. A lot of things. I can bake the bread. I can make the pastry with chicken and rice, with Lebanese chicken soup. Many, many different things. And then the salad, too.
What's in that?
We can stop. You know what? It's hard enough for me to walk there
and
walk
at the same time.
Yeah.
We can wait till we get up there.
I gave you the date of my birth, honey.
I don't remember.
Have you spoken to anybody else yet?
I am meeting with Nick.
Yeah. Nick Gaffer.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to be redundant.
Oh, no.
He has a lot more photographs than I do.
I knew, so Mary told me a little bit about it, especially when I got this position and moved from D.C. She told me a little bit of the history of the church and the miraculous singing.
I'll show you that. Father left the Lebanese drum there, too. And also, the thing that they drink water out of. Now, that right there, that was our program.
Okay.
Served in World War II. 10 died in World War II. So our church did its part. This is the original stone, but the facade is new. I'll show you the side later. This is where all of the women baked the bread and this is the
And so now when you're getting together to bake bread, is that for Easter?
We don't bake bread anymore.
Okay.
We do do the pastry. Yeah. 1922. And then the fire happened in 32.
Okay.
And this is when the new building was dedicated.
Wow.
That's the city here.
Okay.
Really
good.
Yeah, we won the award from the Friends of Wheeling that we kept it sort of in the same style as the original church. Cancer Society. My mother was in the Alzheimer's Society. This is already a Heaven and Women Society. And actually, we're the covers of the church. They have Ray Feldman, they have Blake Shirley, and they have Jenny and Jenny. Everything is there for her. Of course, the Peter Club has a wonderful service raising $2,000 today.
You want to sit? That, yeah.
The women were very industrious. They were very busy. I mean, they didn't waste any time. If it wasn't cooking, it was baking, it was sewing. It was, my grandmother started crocheting when she was five. And she did tablecloth doing, she would trim cows and everything. I saw her once have a tablecloth, and she had about 2 months working to it. But she saw a mistake. And then she would set out and start it over again. That's what they were like. This was our centennial celebration, 100 years. You can have this book. Also, this is some history about my grandmother. My grandfather worked at William Steele. And then his eyesight started to go. So he had to quit work. So he stayed home with the kids. They had three children. She went to work at William Stanton, which is down on Main Street. I can't tell you how many Lebanese women worked there. You could tell who worked there because some of them had fingers missing, some of them had tips of fingers missing, because they worked on the press. You know? My grandmother worked there for 27 years, and she bought and paid for a house during that time. Now, when my mom grew up and married, she and my dad took my grandfather to John Preston. They did some surgery on his eyes, and they restored it pretty good. And that's when he opened the coffee house. Now, when my grandmother was born, she came from a little village up in the mountains in Lebanon. It was called Mangria. There were three children in her family. The youngest boy died. But her brother and she did, they came to the United States. Now, my uncle, great-uncle Jim, he was younger than my grandmother, he joined the Army, he was a day boy in the First World War. And then when he left the Army, he moved to Parkersburg, West Virginia. He opened up the tavern on Juliana Street down there, and that's where he stayed until he passed away. Now, the pastime of some of the women, she was charged, they loved to play cards. And the game was called Vasa. And that was where the jack was the top card in the game. I'm not really familiar with all of it. But they used to get together, and Father Abraham used to join them sometimes. And they all cheated and pleaded a priest. They did, and they accepted it because they all did it. Mm-hmm. You know, they would drink, and they would like that, and look the part, and know what they had.
Was it a person?
Yes.
Because I've
heard of a person. Okay, that was a
person.
Oh, no, it's not it's not Uyghur. Now, another one of the instruments was what the, and this was the classic Lebanese instrument. It was called the oud. Okay, it was a guitar-like thing, but it was oval-shaped, a string instrument, and the back was sort of domed. And one of our prisoners played it, Johnny Brown, who's no longer living, but he played that, and his brother played the good bucket, and his sister Cecilia sang. So while the dancing was going on at one part of the festival, he and his family were playing to the older generation that liked that original Lebanese music, and they would be playing for them and entertaining them. Okay.
And what is the name of the festival?
It's Pepia. I mean, you move and you get tired, but it's so much fun. And there's a couple different dances of the Duckoo, but there's one classic one that everybody does all the time. Yeah, you went home when you dance in a line. Yeah, I love it. So it's really fun.
And are there any different Boston music?
You know, my cousins used to, and his friends used to play, but they're too old now. I mean, my cousin's in a nursing home, the other cousin died, and the other ones are just too old. They can't do it. So no, we have no musicians now. It was a sad. Pittsburgh or Cleveland or wherever they can find them. You know, the one we have for our centennial celebration comes from New York. So it just depends on where you find them and what we can afford to have at that particular time. Now, the neighborhoods that we grew up in, they were fantastic, and kids don't have that today. You know, everything played outside. And it was in the, like I said, Greek and the Lebanese, and, you know, all the mothers watched everybody. I mean, you couldn't get away with anything. You know, because everybody was watching you, but you felt safe. And you played these games outside, and it was wonderful. And people visited back and forth. They sat out on their seats in the summertime and talked. It was just a wonderful way to grow up. You know, you weren't tied to all this technical stuff. You did physical activities, which was very nice. I enjoyed it.
And did you feel, because of the type of time that you had in the opportunity, did you feel different in feeling?
Maybe it's because I was half and half. And my maiden name was sort of, it wasn't Lebanese. It didn't affect me a lot. Some of them, by honey, some of them ran into discrimination. Okay. I know one person wanted to have a job at the drugstore, the corner drugstore, and they said, we don't have salons. And she wasn't from there. She was born in the United States. So, I mean, both my parents were born in the United States. So my grandparents were the immigrants that came over. But had I had more of that look, or the name that went with it, I think I would have felt discrimination a little bit more, but I didn't, so I do know some that did. Because most of the Lebanese aren't even like their skin.
Yeah.
They're fair. I mean, you know.
I know, right.
Yeah, they look just like, you know, everybody else. And father showed me he's from Lebanon. I saw photographs of his, come on in, I think it's like 50 something. His sister died when she was 35 years old, and he always took her to and prayed for her. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it's probably just, you know, I don't think that was always the case, but I think it was probably him being summertime and he was good.
You know what killed me about that, though, when they said they didn't want a foreigner working at the drug school? Their parents were immigrants.
Right.
What did they think?
Yeah.
You know, you weren't an American Indian.
Right.
So everybody basically is a one. So I really don't. I don't. Yeah, I can't stomach any of that stuff. And the prejudice should be left, you know, out somewhere in that stuff. This is us. I'm telling a book. This is the brief history of a church in the fire. That's right. You can have this book and you can read up on that.
Yeah. So how did that fire start?
I guess the heating system, but he checked it before he went to bed and it was fine, so we don't know, you know, what happened. Mm-hmm. So this is just when all the prisoners died. But I don't think you'd be interested in that. This is St. Joseph's Society, and my grandmother's name is in here right there.
They were Habdah?
Yes, she was a Habdah. Initially, she was a Joseph. Her maiden name was Joseph, but she married my grandfather, who was Habdah.
Okay.
And we have pictures, and these pictures. It's called Abraham. Look at the expression or the aspect. That's really early. And these are really early. Communion class. Just to give you an example of how things have changed, this is the communion class. This is my cousin Roberta when she took her first communion. And she was 2 years older than I was. Our communion class last year was 2. Our communion class this year was about 4. So you can see how it's changed. But these were the classrooms.
So how many young children are part of the community?
Now, very few. Maybe 8.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that because families are not, you know, going to church, or because
because they go to Catholic school and they have to go to the church that pays for their, you know, way to go to. So sometimes they come here, but mostly they have to go to the church that the schools that they go to. We don't have a school, so we lose out there.
Uh-huh.
This is pictures of the festival. See how they used to dress up at the festival? I can't believe it. I used to.
And that was August, right?
Yeah, I used to wear a dress in high heels. I don't know why we did that. This was Mr. Simon at that time. This is Nick's mom. Elaine used to be hanging out in the open. And he used to slice me out of it and was like, Sister Paul, the guy was the best sister Bob you ever tasted over a wood fire.
Oh, my God.
It was fantastic. These are. Yeah, these are recent. This is the housekeeper for Father Abraham. This is Father Bacchus and his mother and father over in Lebanon. They're both deceased now. Here's Nick. So you're just looking at him. He'll go into a lot of detail.
Yeah, these photos. Like I say, I have that, what I was talking about. I printed it out for you first.
Okay.
We have that too. This was Father Abraham's 50th anniversary, his Golden Jubilee. And this was only partial. There was another section of the hall over here. So you can see how many prisoners we had at that time.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's
clergy, not our priest. That's the priests that were invited to the event. Yeah, that's my grandmother. I can tell by the bun in the back of her head, and I can tell by her friends that were sitting with her. But this is Father Abraham right there, with the little white beard. Now, this is one of the festivals in Mahajan. This is the man I was telling you about. He used to dance with the finger symbol. And see, he picked that lady up, and he was doing a comic routine with her. Now, this is my grandmother there. And see, there's a bucket there. There's the outline of it there, and that's the bottom of it. She played there. Now, see what these two men are doing? They're playing the midwood. Now, this is my great-uncle Jim. I don't know why he wasn't saying that, because he was really good. But he was standing there watching, and these two men were doing that. But this is the way the festivals used to be. It was nothing really fancy. We just used to form a circle and watch the dancing or the music or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And now it's the festival, right?
Oh, there's a wood floor and there's tents and, you know, it's different.
Is it at Ogilvy or?
That one is bigger. Oh, my goodness. We're the oldest event held in Ogilvy Park. The oldest continuous event in Ogilvy Park. 80-something years up there, I think.
Yeah.
And we still saw a crowd.
I'm hoping that Mary will come when I meet Mary.
Oh, you'd love it, honey.
I really want to make it up.
You would really love it. Now, what they used to do, too, in the early days, they used to put on plays. Okay, and you can see some of the costumes. This must have been a patriarch. This was my aunt. My aunt named. Well, she was the supreme dancer. At the festival, people used to scream for her to get out and dance.
Mm-hmm.
But look at the funny clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that. So this is what they used to do for fun, I guess. They were busy. They were always busy.
Wow, yeah. And very creative.
Uh-huh. Very much so. I remember one time when I was in the first grade, sister asked me if I knew all the words for Silent Night. And I said, yeah. She said, okay. She said, I want you to sing it in that Christmas play. I said, okay, I didn't know any better to have nerves at that time, you know. Well, my mother and everybody came. We were sitting downstairs. I think we had it downstairs right before. And we had Mary and Joseph and Jesus up in the front. And she made me kneel down in front of them and sing Silent Night. And my mother asked the same, where's that little voice coming from? I her friend said, Cheryl, that's Cheryl. Oh my goodness. But like I said, every time they talked to family, it was so nice. And some of these people just did family to us.
Can you tell me a little bit about the recipes that we started talking about?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The food. Like I said, the kibbeh is the national dish. Okay? And you can make that in so many different ways. Basically, what it consists of is cracked wheat, which is the bulgur, and we call it bulgur. And that comes in fine. It comes in number two, which is semi-portion, number three, which is fourth. Some people do the number two. They like a little bit more of the bite to the tooth with it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people use the fine. I can use either one. It doesn't make any difference to me. Consists of that and either ground lamb, pureed onion. Some people put in a pureed green pepper, salt and pepper, and then your spice is your preference. Some people put a dash of cinnamon. My grandmother used allspice. That's what I use sometimes, but I use the seven spice mix. Okay, that's the basic recipe for kibbeh. And you can make it anyway. You can make it in patties and either fry it or bake it. You can make it in sainee, which is in a pan. You put a layer in the bottom, and then you saute some ground meat, onions, pine nuts, put it on top of that. Then another layer of kibbeh on top of that and score it, bake it in the oven. So it's made in a variety of ways. Now another thing that the Lebanese love is the yogurt, which we call leban. And we've all been taught how to make it ourselves from scratch. So I do that and I love that. Tabbouleh is another national dish. That's with the cracked wheat, that's a salad, like a full salad with tomatoes, green onions, a lot of parsley, a lot of vegetables in that. There's a lot of different dishes. Lebanese food is labor intensive. I'll tell you that right now. Everything is fresh. Everything takes a lot of time to make. The Lebanese chicken soup, I use the prepared little, it's called asini bikepi. They're these tiny little dumplings that they use sometimes in wedding soup. I buy a box of that, but what my grandmother used to do, she used to take the cracked wheat, sprinkle it with water, sprinkle it with flour, and then roll it. Like this, you get those tiny little beads. And my mother tried it one time. Some of them were big, some of them were little, some of them were oval. She said, that's forget it. So, but that's what the Lebanese women used to do. And they all baked their bread. They all baked their own bread. My grandmother was 5 foot, if she was 5 foot. And she used to bake 25 pounds of flour at a time. There was never anything left. Never anything left. And that would be like a week for a week and a half supply of bread. When it came out of the oven, it was hard. So they had to dampen it, and then they would store it. It was nice and soft. Now what they made was not the little piece of bread. It was the big round. Like sort of they called the like the mountain bread, not oat. It was big. And it separated. It had like two layers on it. And you know how they did the pizza?
Yep.
That's the way they used to do the bread.
Okay.
And in the old country, I guess they used to lay it over a hot stone to bake it. Yeah. But now, I mean, then she just put it in the oven, down on the floor of the oven.
Okay.
When it would raise, she would take it with a knife, and then take it out and put it in the boiler to brown it.
Wow.
That was a lot of work.
Yeah.
Every loaf had to be done like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 25 pounds.
So that would be exactly the number of work?
Yes.
Yes.
So that's the way they... they used to work. But like I said, when she came home, she would be cursing. She wouldn't be singing. She would be doing something. Another thing she loved, I don't know about the other women, she loved having movies. Every Saturday, she would take me to the Liberty Theater. We would watch a doubleheader. I hated them. A doubleheader. I went for the popcorn and the cartoon when the people come to me. Every Saturday, that was on the agenda. I had to do it. She had to do it. She loved it.
Why do you think that was?
It's easy for her to understand. There was a good guy and a bad guy. You know? Wasn't a lot of dialogue. A lot of action. I mean, that's my guess.
Yeah, that's
Then we used to walk through town, you know, window shop and do different things like that. But the Lebanese people, the first thing in their hearts and their minds was their faith. That was number one with them, and nothing could take that away. Second thing was family. Family was totally important to them. And then after that, they loved their food, they loved their dancing, they loved their music, they loved their laugh, they loved people. They were some of the most hospitable people you would ever want to meet. And when you go to their house and they would feed you, you couldn't get out the door without that. And a lot of them are still like that today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I loved about them.
Mm-hmm. And so when you get together, with a book the things that you make there?
Okay. Sometimes we make the sweets, which is the mame and the orange cookies, mame.
And the
pretzel cookies is a Ross Aid, and that's for Easter.
Okay.
The mame is the round dome cookies stuffed with walnuts and covered with powdered sugar. We usually have those at the festival. And then, of course, the bolera, so we don't make that by hand anymore because that's a lot of work. Baklava,
yeah.
Is what the Greeks call them, yeah. And then, of course, the twist, the sesame twist, and the namora, which is sort of like the namur, only you bake it in a tray, and I stuck mine in the middle with nuts. And then when you take it out of the oven, you pour the simple syrup mixture over it. And it's really good. There's a lot of different Lebanese cookies, but the ones we usually make are the namur, the lamin, and the sesame cookies. And then for the bake sale, I usually make the menorah. Now, for the regular bake sale, we make new fries, spinach fries, and then we do the zazo, which is the savory bread, and then we do the sweet bread, which is a round, it's not a pita bread, it's just a round, brown piece of bread, which they call manushi, and then they put butter and sugar and sesame seeds on top of it.
Okay.
And a lot of people like that, they call that the sweet bread.
And the flavor you think
zaza. It's a very pungent thyme. Very pungent.
Okay.
And you mix that with sesame seeds and oil and you smear
that
on top of that.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
Okay.
The first time my husband tasted it, he thought it was a cinnamon roll he was going to eat. And he actually shook when he took a bite of it. But now he likes it.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have to develop a taste for it. My daughter, when she was little, used to with the topping off of it.
Oh, yeah, that is really good.
Have you ever tasted that?
Yeah, I think I've had some in New York.
Actually, I was watching one of the cooking shows, and Andy Zimmern, have you heard of him?
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned that as a spice that he would love to use on regular food today. He did it with chicken. Chicken with it, and he said it was delicious. So that's the other up and coming.
Yeah. Yeah, I think some of that Middle Eastern food is, you know, you can find almost everywhere.
I know. Hummus is the easiest thing to make, too. Very easy, and it's good.
Yeah.
My daughter works with the school children at Oklahoma City, and she works with kindergarten this year. And she says, Mom, it's so funny. She says, a lot of them bring hummus for lunch.
Yeah.
With vegetables and pita bread.
Yep.
I said, well, that's good for them.
Better than it.
I know. I know.
Is there something that you miss for food that you don't make or can't really get anymore?
Yeah. I can make it, but it's so much trouble to make it. It's called cruschetta. And what it is, it's similar to a ravioli. It's the little round dough, and you stuff it with ground meat, onions, and parsley.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wrap it and seal it.
Mm-hmm.
and then you cook it in a yogurt bowl. Oh, I mean, it's delicious. It is delicious, but it's so time-consuming to make. And then another thing that the Lebanese women love and the Lebanese men love, too, is fusa, which is a squash. It is a certain type of squash. It's short and it's a little bit fat. You cook the inside out of it. You put meat and onions and rice and seasonings in there. Then you plug it back up and cook it in a tomato sauce. Yeah, and it's very good. Yeah, it's really food healthy. It really is.
Yeah.
So unless you come up with something that you want to ask me.
Okay. So the festival is supposed to be on the 12th of August?
It's always the Sunday before the 15th.
Okay.
The 15th is the Annunciation of the Blessed Virgin. And they started the festival to renew the church after the fire. Okay? So they always have it in honor of the Blessed Virgin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always the Sunday before the 15th. Now this year it will be the Sunday before the 15th, whatever Sunday that falls on.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I hope so too. Her dad used to come once in a while.
I know she just moved in with her parents because they were not in great health. So I think she's just a fair thing. So I'm not sure how much she could travel.
Did she ever live in Leon? I didn't know her.
Okay.
Like I said, I knew the dad and I knew his sister and then the older brother.
Mm-hmm. She's really nice.
I'm sure.
Yeah. She was sort of a good mom for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's really sweet.
How long have you been doing this?
I got my master's in 2011.
You're doing it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is with the Humanities Council, but we're also trying to build a FISRES program that would help support cultural heritage communities.
We're trying to keep it going. I'll tell you that. We're working hard to keep it going. But as people move away, and like I said, the industry in the valley has gone downhill. You know, we used to have a lot of manufacturing here, but that's all gone.
Mm-hmm.
So when that went, the younger people started to move out to get employment. So naturally, that lessened our population in the parish. But we are working feverishly to keep it going, so hopefully we can.
Yeah.
I'd hate to lose this.
I know.
I would hate to lose this.
Yeah.
I was baptized here.
Yeah.
I was married at that altar. I made my first communion here. I made my confirmation here. I buried my family out of this church.
That's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My grandparents were among the first members of this church.
Yeah. Well, also, we're hoping to build programming and there may be grants available. One of the things we're applying for now is funding that would support a master apprentice program. So a pair would apply and then the master artist would get a stipend for an apprenticeship for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be, it could be food related.
Mm-hmm.
Could be, maybe there's a new location here.
He's tried to get a folk dance group going with the doctors.
Okay.
He would even supply answers. He said that there was very little interest. Of course, it's not inherent in our population today.
Right.
Now, I grew up with it. If my grandmother didn't have a drum, she would pound on a pot or a table to get me to dance. You know, they don't have that today.
Yeah, right. And sometimes I think it takes going away and then
that's
what I'm saying.
did love it. I always did love the culture. But due to the lack of employment in the area, my husband was in the transportation business, and that really went south big time. So we had to move to Columbus for his job.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there for 18 years. But all the time I was there, I missed this.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't really appreciate it as much as I should have when I was here.
And so when did you move back?
2003.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And how far away from it?
It's probably 2 hours.
Okay. So you were,
I always came back to the festival, and I helped with the festival, too, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, I went to church up there, so I didn't come back. I did it. My family was down by then, so I didn't come back all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I always came back for the affairs.
Okay. Did you find the Lebanese church there?
No. Maronite.
Okay.
No, there was a priest who used to say a Maronite mass once in a while at different churches in the area. And we used to go to those every time one came available, but that was far in between.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't anything scattered. But now they do have a mission there.
Okay.
So the priest from Dayton comes down and says mass on Sunday for those
mm-hmm.
people.
Can you explain what Maronite is?
Yes. Maronite, this is a founder right over here, that's St. Maron. Actually, he's like St. Patrick for the Irish. St. Maron for the Lebanese.
Okay.
He was a monk. And he founded the Maronite Church. And our rite is called, it's an Eastern rite. And it's under the Pope, the same way the Roman Catholic Church is. Father was explaining it to me. I think there's like 22 or 23 different branches of the Catholic Church. I didn't realize there was that many. But the way he explained it to me, you take a flower pot, okay? That's the Pope of Mass Rome, that's the Vatican. And then the flowers that grow out, that's all the different branches
mm-hmm.
of the church. Now, the way we differ from the Roman Catholic Church in the liturgy, we always take communion from the priest's hand. We never do it like this. We never take it from anybody but the priest, and we don't take it in our hand. He puts it in our mouth. He dips it in wine first, and then puts it in our mouth. We never touch the host. Also, another difference, and this is my favorite, and I get chills every time it happens, the consecration. And that's in the middle of the mass. That's when the priest says, he mimics the words of Christ, this is my body, take this and eat. That's the consecration. He chants that in Aramaic, and that's the language that Christ spoke. So when you're hearing the language that Christ spoke, it does something to you.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the big difference.
I grew up going to sometimes you would put it in the hand, sometimes they would
mm-hmm.
put it on the mouth. Maybe it just depended on the priest, or I don't know.
Well, the Roman Catholics have lay ministers that stand up there with the priest and give out communion.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they also have the wine that people,
mm-hmm.
I never drink the wine.
No, I don't either.
You don't know where that rim has been, so.
I would just put it.
No. But anyway, that's the basic difference. Otherwise, he says the mass in English. They know the homily, the gospel in English, everything like that. So it's basically the same. It's all under the umbrella of the Vatican.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
I hope I've helped.
It was really nice.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
Yeah, hopefully I can come back.
I hope so. I'd like to see you out there. I'll get you out there dancing the duckies. Yes, I will too.